controlling bugs and disease as it feeds for brighter, more vibrant flowers. So count your blessings and stop to smell the scientific advances. Bayer Advanced. Better science, better results. BayerAdvanced.com.
You're on the money. The daily talk show making the most out of your finances. On the Money features advice from local experts on building wealth, saving and investing, and homes and loans. And now, your host for On the Money.
Good evening, I'm Gary Pomerantz. I'm here with my colleague Gideon Traub, and you're listening to On the Money, our weekly radio show airing from 6 to 7 each Monday, addressing timely topics of concern to those interested in growing and protecting their wealth.
And hi, I'm Hayden Traub. I have a CFA and an MBA and a practicing investment manager for the past 22 years and am the owner principal of my own firm, Traub Capital Management, based here in Needham. For more information about my firm, you can visit my website at traubcapital.com.
This is Gary Pomerantz. I've been a certified financial planner and investment advisor for over 14 years, and I'm the managing director of Lexington Wealth Management based in Lexington, Mass. For more information about our firm, please visit our website at www.lexingtonwealth.com. Before we begin, our lawyers would like us to let you know that the opinions expressed during our show tonight are our own and not the opinions of our respective firms, and that any information presented during the show is general in nature and not specific to your own investment portfolio.
We usually start the show off with a recap of what's been happening lately, looking back a little bit to last week as well as what's going to happen this week. And this, and yet another day of a big move on Monday. This one was on the upside. Actually, most of them have been lately.
That means Hayden is even more depressed.
No. Happy to see the market go up. I'm not depressed at all. But I think it's gone a little too far. We'll talk about that.
Like I said, Hayden's a little more depressed now.
But anyway, the market was up 1.5% today, which means that we've broken the threshold for the S&P, the 1,000 barrier, for those who are following that index. And the NASDAQ actually went through the 2,000 level. So pretty notable day, pretty notable day, I should say. And the big reason for that was the ISM measure, which stands for Institute of Supply Management, which today's was related to manufacturing and came in better than expected. And the interesting thing, like a lot of the things that have happened lately, better than expected, but still kind of negative in the sense that the number is below 50, which means that the manufacturing economy, if you will, is still contracting if it's below 50. But it came in better than expected. So it's this old, same old story of getting less worse. Right, Gary?
It's the same old story, but I'll take it.
Yeah,
the market's
going
up.
We're happy with that. And last week, yet another gangbuster week, up 7.6% for the S&P, up 8.6% for the Dow, which is actually another switch. The Dow, which is tends to be more blue chip, kind of slower moving stocks, has generally been lagging the S&P this year since the rally started anyway. And now, last week, we actually had the Dow doing better. I think that may have partly related to the NASDAQ cooling off a bit after a torrid run. And there's fewer tech stocks in the Dow than there are in the S&P.
Are you sure that some of today's run-up wasn't Greenspan's doing? He did actually come out, last night, saying that, in fact, he felt that the economy was bottoming out and that we were going to have greater growth in the next quarter than many are expecting.
That probably didn't hurt. Although back in the mid-90s when he said the market was irrationally exuberant, the market paid no attention to him and went flying after that. So.
And at this point, he's working for PIMCO, isn't he? So.
I don't know. Nate, is he really?
He is.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Anyway, that the month for the Dow, the up 8.6%, was the best since October 2002. Which, as you may recall, for those who follow this type of information, was near the bottom of the 2002 market, although I was checking the data, and although there was a good month following that really good month, we actually then got a sell-off of about 10%. And I personally, as we talked about a minute ago, I think we may see something like that. I don't think we're going to go straight up as long as the economy is not going wildly positive. So
I know there's always that 200-day moving average issue, though. For the bulls out there, there actually is enough evidence starting to accumulate to argue that we might be in the throes of the next bull market.
Well, I mean, it is a bull market. It's up 50% off the bottom today. You know, marks that as well. And that's by anybody's definition a bull market. So, but it doesn't mean we don't get a sell-off as well. In any case, some other interesting news. Ford actually had sales go up by over 2% this past month, which was the first time in 20 months we actually saw Ford, or probably any car company, come through, or a major car company, come through with sales growth. Some of it was related to this new Cash for Clunker program, which has been wildly successful in terms of people jumping in. Some of the things that happened last week that helped drive the market higher were that new home sales were up substantially, 384,000. And, of course, I'm always looking for the downside lately. And the downside is sales were up 11% from May to June, but prices fell actually 6% from May to June. So it's the old supply and demand. If you lower your prices, you'll get more buyers, and I think that's what we saw last month. It'll be interesting to see if we can actually get sales going up with prices going up. I think that would make me think we're getting we're at the bottom or have seen
the
bottom.
I mean, prices going down begs the question of whether or not there's deflation going on.
Right. And that's a concern for equity investors in particular. So anyway, that was one of the big pieces of news. Consumer confidence actually dipped last month, which came out last week. And probably the more notable piece of information was that second quarter GDP came out, and that was down 1%, which, again, was better than expected, but still not good. It was the first time since we've actually had this information, which goes back to the end of World War II, where we had four quarters in a row of negative GDP growth. So it is officially the worst recession, at least since the Depression. And they also revised the Q1 GDP. So what I had mentioned earlier was Q2 GDP, just to clarify. Q1 GDP was was down 6.4%.
Hey, why don't you just explain GDP in general?
Sure. GDP is a measure of the production of the economy, so it stands for gross domestic product, and real GDP is really what we're typically talking about, even though the real seems to often be dropped. Real means after inflation, so when we're measuring the production of the economy, it's not including production related to just increasing prices. It's trying to measure actual production, and obviously it's not a good thing when we're producing less. So that's the reason GDP is of great interest. If we're producing less, that's going to typically hurt earnings of the companies, and ultimately that should hurt the stock market. May help the bond market, which we saw last year, at least for some bonds. In terms of earnings last week, ExxonMobil was probably the biggest company that reported. It's actually the biggest company, period, in terms of market value. And they were down. Their earnings were down 66%, which I think was very exciting for most people because they're probably happy to see the oil companies get it. But I'm not sure everybody should be so happy because, as I said a second ago, it's the largest company by market value. So if you own a mutual fund, you probably own a piece of ExxonMobil. And a lot of people just own it outright. So it's not necessarily good news. Exxon has definitely lagged the market in this run-up. It's actually been down in recent months. So that's definitely been a drag on the big broad indices. So that's the earnings front. Then this week the news is we have personal spending and income coming up. Income is actually expected to go down this month, so that's not good, and that's probably related to some of the other things we're going to hear about. Non-farm payrolls, unemployment rate, those are coming in, and generally those are expected to continue to be somewhat negative. In other words, the unemployment rate continue to go up a little bit, and non-farm payrolls will probably continue to shrink. So all of these things are not particularly good, and we're also going to get initial jobless claims, which Those are expected to be down, but we're still seeing pretty high levels on that front. And consumer credit is the last thing of note on the economic front, which is expected to continue to shrink. So we continue to get credit contraction.
Right, companies posting earnings this week: Cisco, Procter and Gamble, and Kraft Foods.
Yep. Right. So
we'll find out a lot more, a little bit about tech.
Yeah,
be kind of an interesting week.
Yeah, and then the other thing of note is that earnings are coming in better than expected. And that's, I think, as big a reason as any that the market's been rallying so strongly. Originally, coming into the quarter, we thought we'd see a 35% decline in earnings year to year. And in fact, so far, although not everybody's reported, it's about 25%. So it's still down significantly, but it's better than expected. Even though with that improvement in terms of expected earnings, we're now looking at a forward PE, meaning the price relative to earnings, expected earnings of 17 for the S&P 500.
A little bit high.
Which is still on the high side.
But
not crazy. I mean, we certainly have had higher levels, but it's above average. And it's a bit of a concern because we got to get not only earnings coming through, but they got to come through better than that now higher expected number. So we need earnings to really deliver for the market rally to continue.
Right. Well, the question is, will there actually be earnings next quarter? And that's what some individuals are starting to say. That's what Greenspan is saying. Let's hope.
If you'd like to call in with questions, call 888-205-2263. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
The New England Country Club is offering up to a $1,000 reward or a free golf membership for anyone who refers a golf outing during the 2008 or 2009 season. That's right. The New England Country Club is conveniently located in Bellingham, Mass., nearby to the Route 495 and 95 intersection. Many people choose the New England Country Club because it is the best-conditioned public golf course in New England. Check out newenglandcountryclub.com and click on outing info. Take advantage of this short-term promotion and earn yourself up to $1,000 or a free membership. Call 508-479-4806 or email info@newenglandcountryclub.com. Again, call 508-479-4806 or email info@newenglandcountryclub.com.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
Take the Plymouth Ferry to Provincetown. Cruise in comfort and enjoy your trip across Cape Cod Bay without the hassles of a lengthy ride in Cape traffic. En route, enjoy a narrated tour of historic Plymouth Harbor. Before you know it, you're in Provincetown. Spend the day poking around unique shops and galleries. Enjoy a relaxing lunch in one of P-Town's famous restaurants. Experience Cape Cod's National Seashore. Captain John Boat's large, comfortable vessels feature an enclosed galley with your favorite foods and beverages, including cocktails, and a helpful, friendly crew. So travel to P-Town in style with Captain John Boat's. Reservations call 508-747-2400. That's 508-747-2400. 10 a.m. departures daily from Mayflower to State Pier in Plymouth. Returns at 6 p.m. Take the express route to P-Town. Call 508-747-2400.
Hello again, you're listening to On the Money. This is Hayden Traub. I am my own firm here in Needham, and the firm is Traub Capital Management. For information on the firm, you can go to www.traubcapital.com. And the phone number, if you'd like to call in for tonight's show, is 888-205-2263. That's 888-205-2263.
Do we have the policy where we're going to buy listeners a beer or if they call in?
I think we'll do that, yes.
And I'm Gary Pomerantz, the Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management. For more information about our firm, please visit our website at www.lexingtonwealth.com. The focus of tonight's show is exchange-traded funds. What are they? How are they different from index mutual funds? And what role do they play in the development of a diversified portfolio?
So what we thought we would do is just give a quick explanation of what an exchange-traded fund is, also commonly referred to as an ETF, and then bring in our guests. So the exchange-traded fund is really kind of a hybrid of what's known as an open-end fund and a closed-end fund. If you don't know what that means, you probably already know what an open-end fund because most people own them. That's typically what type of mutual fund people own. And what it means is if you want to buy the fund, you just send in your money and you buy the fund at that day's close, and the company will then give you shares. It will create new shares to issue to you and vice versa. And so the price is always the value of the underlying fund, and that's how the open-end fund works, whereas a closed-end fund has a fixed number of shares and they can trade on the exchange just like any other stock. And so the exchange-traded fund kind of blends those two features. They own a basket of securities, and yet they trade on an exchange. The fund itself trades on an exchange that people can buy and sell at any price, whatever price people are willing to pay. But they typically are going to trade close to the underlying value because there are people out there who can arbitrage the fund, meaning push the price back towards what would be considered fair value. And we're happy to go into the logistics at some point, although it gets pretty detailed. But the point is, it's a fund that you can buy and sell just like a stock, and it's going to track typically some sector or index of the market or in some cases like commodity, things like that. And they started out as really index funds, and the majority are still index funds. The majority actually were originally equity index funds and still are, but we now have bond funds and we now have commodity funds. So it's at the point now where these exchange-traded funds are often used by people to just get exposure and sometimes multiple exposures through leverage to the different sectors of the stock market. So that's a quick primer, and we're happy to go into more details if somebody wants to call in and ask specific questions. But in the meantime, we have a guest here tonight. Our guest is Gus Flatus. He is the founder and managing director of Rita Advisors. Rita is focused on developing innovative financial tools to serve the needs of sophisticated investors. That means typically institutional investors, big corporations. And prior to forming the firm, Gus was chief investment officer for ProFund Advisors, where he was responsible for over 100 portfolios and led the launch of ProShares family of exchange-traded funds, which included the first levered and inverse index ETFs listed in the U.S., and we're going to talk about those later because those have been a bit of a controversial exchange-traded fund.
It was certainly in the market that we just went through.
Right, yes. Before joining ProFunds, Gus was president of SSGA Funds Management, where he was responsible for the company's ETF, mutual fund, and separately managed account business with assets over $115 billion. And so with that introduction, we want to welcome Gus to the show.
Thanks, Gary Hayden.
Gus, maybe first question I guess I would say is I just explained as best as I could what an exchange-traded fund is and a little bit of information about them. Is there anything I missed or that you think is important that I didn't cover right off the bat?
No, I think your explanation was right on the money. The ETF, if you want to think of it as a open-end as a regular mutual fund, the only difference is instead of buying or selling or redeeming your securities through a mutual fund sponsor, just think of taking your shares and listing them on a stock market and then being able to trade them back and forth with other investors that are interested in the same exposure.
Right. Okay. So maybe you could explain to our listeners and us why what differentiates a mutual fund from an exchange-traded fund maybe if you want, focusing on kind of index funds, in other words, an index mutual fund like the S&P 500, which is probably an index that most of our listeners know of.
Yeah, no, that's a great example to focus on. The SPY, the SPY, which is the SPDR, which is the oldest ETF in the marketplace here in the U.S., today represents about $60 to $70 billion in assets. And if you want to compare the SPDR to an open-ended index fund like the Vanguard 500 fund, really the differences are very simple to understand. The first is, as Hayden mentioned earlier, to buy the Vanguard 500 fund, you would subscribe to units directly through Vanguard. So sometime during the day, you would have to notify Vanguard that you wanted to buy shares in the fund. And then at the end of the day, they would let you know how many shares you bought at the closing price of the fund that day. The difference with the SPDR is that you could immediately place an order to buy that security on the stock exchange at any point in time during the day. So you have a lot more control at what price you can trade the security. You can buy it with limit orders, stop to sell it with stop loss orders, et cetera. It gets you more control in terms of at what price you actually get into the fund itself.
Just to clarify, limit orders means you set a specific price up front that you want to buy it at.
Yeah. So you can say, I want to buy the SPDR, but I don't want to pay any more than $90 a share. And then the broker will have to honor that order and try to trade for you within that specification.
Yeah. And the stop loss would be that you wouldn't sell it unless if it hits a certain price, then you wouldn't want to sell it on the way down, right?
Correct.
So
correct.
Important to understand all of these things, especially given in light of what we just went through in the market. I think the reason why many managers at this point are starting to think about ETFs maybe in place of mutual funds is because you have the additional benefit of being able to trade them right out.
Right, do something in the middle of the day, when the market was moving 5-10%
within a day, which is usually what it moves in a year.
You know, then made it a benefit to use exchange traded funds.
That is correct, and it is novel to know that you can buy something at a price you know instead of having to wait until the end of the day to see what the transaction cost you. The other key advantages are you can buy ETFs in single shares, which means that a typical ETF might have a share price of $50 to $100 a share, which means that you can buy them in smaller increments. Typically, when you're buying mutual funds, they might have minimums that are $1,000 or in some cases even higher than that. So it makes it more flexible for people who are trying to buy in smaller increments. The last difference is, given that it's a security and it's listed on an exchange, is you can borrow the shares and sell them short. So that may not be appropriate for all investors, but for some individuals, that may be one of the only ways that they have to establish hedge positions in the marketplace to some of the broader segments that are covered by ETFs.
Okay.
You might want to explain to our listeners what borrowing the shares and selling them short means.
Without getting into all the technical details, if you're going to sell a security shorting has become a very bad word in the U.S. markets over the last few years. But in essence, it has legitimate purposes within the marketplace. And if you believe that a certain segment of the marketplace is going to go down, but you have long exposures to that segment, you might be able to find an ETF that has similar exposure. You would, in essence, borrow the shares from somebody who has them long and sell the shares that you just borrowed, hoping that the price is going to go down to offset your losses on your long exposure.
Right.
So in essence, that's it. There's a lot more details to it, but we can go into that at a future point.
Right. Well, we don't need to go in the whole short thing, but obviously they could do it whether they have the exposure or not. They may just want to make a bet, right?
If they want to bet against... Speculators are not popular people in the market these days, but
right.
Absolutely. For speculators,
right.
They work as well.
Right. So you believe the market's going down, you could bet against it.
Correct.
That's pretty much the answer.
So So why would an maybe you can give the pros and cons of an exchange traded fund. Let's maybe stick with the index fund if you want, relative to a mutual fund. Why would one investor want to favor investing in an exchange traded fund over a regular mutual fund or vice versa?
We're going to hold that question till we come back. You're listening to Hayden Traub and Gary Pomerantz here on The Money. And the topic of this evening is exchange-traded funds and why we might want to hang on to them in our portfolios.
If you want to call in, the number is 888-205-2263. That's 888-205-2263.
Traub Capital. Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
You too can be successful at real estate investing. The Eastern Massachusetts Real Estate Investors Association provides a networking and educational venue for both new and seasoned investors alike. Eastern Mass REIA meets the second Thursday of each month at 6:30 p.m. at the Rockland Holiday Inn. We sponsor educational events, seminars, and mentoring for investors of all levels. We are the number one source in the greater Boston area to get deals done. We are open to the public. Join us for our next meeting. Visit EasternMassREIA.com.
Take the Plymouth Ferry to Provincetown. Cruise in comfort and enjoy your trip across Cape Cod Bay without the hassles of a lengthy ride in Cape traffic. En route, enjoy a narrated tour of historic Plymouth Harbor. Before you know it, you're in Provincetown. Spend the day poking around unique shops and galleries. Enjoy a relaxing lunch in one of P-Town's famous restaurants. Experience Cape Cod's National Seashore. Captain John Boat's large, comfortable vessels feature an enclosed galley with your favorite foods and beverages, including cocktails, and a helpful, friendly crew. So travel to P-Town in style with Captain John Boat's. Reservations call 508-747-2400. That's 508-747-2400. 10 a.m. departures daily from Mayflower to State Pier in Plymouth. Returns at 6 p.m. Take the express route to P-Town. Call 508-747-2400.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
You want pain relief that's fast? You want pain relief that's strong? Then you want Advil Liquid Gels. They're faster and stronger on tough pain than Tylenol Rapid Release Gels. Advil Liquid Gels. They rush real liquid relief right to wherever you hurt, so you can forget about your pain and get back to your day. Advil Liquid Gels. Liquid fast. Advil strong.
Brands are trademarks of their respective owners. Use as directed.
You're listening to On the Money. This is Gary Pomerantz, and I'm the director, managing director of Lexington Wealth Management. For more information about our firm, please visit our website at www.lexingtonwealth.com. If you're just tuning in, before the break, we were talking about exchange-traded funds, and that's the focus of the show this evening, the potential benefits and pitfalls of when you might use them in place of mutual fund indexes, or even maybe in the future in place of mutual funds in general. Joining us today to add a specialist advice to our conversation is Gus Flaides, founder and managing director of Rita Advisors and the former chief investment officer of ProFund Advisors and their family of exchange-traded funds. If you're calling, if you're listening and you'd like to call in and ask some questions, telephone number 888-205-2263. Before the break, Hayden, you were asking a question.
Right. So, Gus, just to repeat it for those listening, I was asking, well, why would one investor choose an exchange-traded fund over another fund, over a regular mutual fund? And maybe you could talk about the differences there and who might prefer one over the other.
Yeah, well, primarily ETFs right now cover index funds. So the question is, why would an investor prefer an ETF versus an index mutual fund? And the short answer is that there's very little difference between the two products. A couple of things to keep in mind is, on the ETF, if you want to buy an ETF, you typically have to pay a commission as you would buy a regular security. So a lot of people, if they're looking to be buy and hold investors, they might want to subscribe to the Vanguard 500 fund or a similar fund, because there's typically not a a fee or a commission to pay for subscriptions. Given that commission rates have come down very little, that typically doesn't make a difference for most investors. But if you're investing small amounts on a monthly basis, you need to go back and forth and figure out if it makes sense for you.
When you say subscribe, you just mean buy, right? Just put in a purchase.
But there are fees for trading in mutual funds too. It might cost you $20. It might cost you 15
it depends on the sponsors, funds that you're working with. Some have no fees. Others might charge you fees. So you need to be very careful and understand what the actual costs. The real difference in my mind is something that investors typically don't experience firsthand or don't see firsthand. And that is really the one of the biggest inefficiencies of the traditional open-ended mutual fund is due to the fact that investors can come in and out of those funds. So if you're a buy and hold investor in a long-term mutual fund, investors that are selling out of that fund, the fund itself is liquidating securities and you're experiencing the cost of those liquidations as a shareholder in that fund and potentially the tax consequences of that investor selling out. The beauty of the ETF is that investors cannot transact directly with the portfolio. So as you're buying or selling shares of an ETF, typically you're buying or selling against somebody else who's looking to take the other side on the stock market. So the ETF largely takes away investor cash flows out of the equation. So that means that your typical ETF in principle should be a lot more tax efficient than an open-ended mutual fund because the ETF will never have to liquidate securities to meet a redemption request.
What about at the end of the year when you have mutual funds announcing that they have X amount of long-term capital gains, X amount of short-term capital gains? Does that happen within an ETF as well?
Well, it could, but in an index mutual fund, the majority of capital gains in an index mutual fund are going to come from two sources. The first is the mutual fund is going to have to rebalance its portfolio as stocks are changed within the index. An ETF will have to do the same thing. But the largest proportion of capital gains in a mutual fund are going to be generated by the fact that people are going to be redeeming shares. And as those shares are sold, capital gains are being realized. The fact that the ETF never has to redeem investor shares directly is going to create a potential advantage relative to the mutual fund.
So, for example, last year in the throes of the market woes, and you had many investors actually hearing from their mutual funds in November with gains because they came off of a year that was pretty good. And yet, you know, they've lost 25% in the fund. If that were an ETF, would that not have happened?
Well, again, there is the potential for gains within an ETF if there's a lot of rebalancing given changes in the index itself. But if you're looking at something like the S&P 500 that has very little turnover, typically you would have found that the S&P 500 would have had little or no capital gains distributions in a year where more active funds would definitely have had some.
So if an ETF were an actively managed fund instead of an index fund, then would that fund, that ETF, have just as much potential capital gains exposure as any mutual fund?
Well, it would have less. And again, remember, the sources for capital gains are coming from two fronts. One is the trading of the fund to reflect the index or an inactive fund, the manager's perspective on shares that are going to do better or worse. And the second part is investor redemptions. The ETF will never have to do the investor redemption side.
So people running for the hills, that's not going to be an issue within the ETF.
Correct. The ETF will not have to deal with redemptions in that
side. So on the downside, it helps you. On the downside, it should help you. Even if you had an actively managed ETF, it should still have a little less.
You should have some tax efficiencies with the ETF.
It'll probably help you either way, though, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that is true with exchange-traded funds compared to open-end funds is that the price that it's trading at can move away from the underlying value of the fund, unlike an open-end fund, which can be good and bad. But people need to be aware of that, and maybe you could explain why that happens or how that happens.
Well, in the world of ETFs, premiums or discounts are never good. So we work very hard to make sure that our products that are out there are going to trade very close to net asset value because, again, for the most part, the products that are out there are index funds. So premiums or discounts just create tracking error that people aren't expecting in investing in the products.
Tracking error is just the difference of the fund return relative to the index it's trying to track.
To the underlying index, correct. Now, the reason most ETFs will have limited premiums or discounts is that unlike the closed-end funds, there is the ability for new units to be issued or redeemed in the marketplace. Now, without getting too specific, Hayden talked about the arbitrageurs earlier in the show. And if for whatever reason there's more buyers and sellers in the marketplace. In a closed-end fund, you would see the closed-end fund go to a premium until the market cleared.
Right.
In an ETF, if that premium started to materialize, it would be possible for an arbitrageur to come in and sell the share short at the premium price in the marketplace and at the same time cover that short by subscribing to units in creation unit size, which means that they would assemble the same basket of securities and deliver it to the fund in exchange for units at the fair value, thereby closing out the short that they have. The more the arbitrageurs do this, they force the price down, bringing it back in line with the fair value, which is what investors want to see in an index product.
So the bottom line is for fairly popular and broad, at least equity funds, especially index funds, the value is not going to move away. The price is not going to move far away from the underlying fair value, correct?
Well, for most products, the price shouldn't move away because the arbitrage profits, the arbitrage incentive is there regardless of what the fund is. What you need to be careful with is some funds, for instance, high yield bond funds.
I was just going to say HYG was trading at a 10% premium.
The basket of those securities may be more difficult to assemble. So what you have to be careful with is ETF is going to be as liquid as the securities that it holds. So for securities that are highly illiquid, you might see wider spreads and bigger premiums or discounts because it's difficult to get the arbitrage done. But at some point, it becomes wide enough that there's enough incentive for arbitrageurs to come in and bring the prices back in line with fair value.
Right. So what are the typical variations, premiums? In other words, like... I assume like on the S&P 500 type ETFs that it's typically within maybe a quarter of a percent of the underlying value.
The SPDR is probably the most efficient ETF that's out there.
Right.
And if you follow the market closely, you'll see that the spread on the SPDR is literally a few pennies wide.
Right.
So, you know, differences of less than a quarter of a percent would incent people to come in and arbitrage that are very quickly.
So like 0.05% or something typically.
That's probably more like for products like the SPDR.
Right.
Other products that are going to have liquidity issues, for instance, high yield bond products.
You might be better in a mutual fund if you have to buy it at a premium, no?
Well, it's not necessarily you're buying at a premium. You're basically buying the bid offer spread that's out there in the marketplace. And remember, when you're buying the mutual fund, you're sending cash to the mutual fund manager that's going to have to go buy the same securities. The only difference is that in the mutual fund, the fund is paying the spread. You're not seeing the spread as the investor directly. So at the end of the day, you're buying the same securities.
But
just in the ETF,
off.
It's more transparent.
But you still would be better off because the fund is bearing the cost and you're just a small owner of that fund, whereas if you buy the exchange traded fund, you're kind of paying the premium as if you're bearing all those higher costs, let's say.
Well, that's a plus or minus because you're correct in terms of on your way in or on your way out, but if you're staying in there, you're going to be bearing your share of that cost going forward.
Right.
So that's actually one of the advantages of the ETF is that people who are coming in or out are bearing their share of the expenses, which protects the buy and hold investors from having to experience those costs.
Got it. Okay.
You're listening to On the Money with Hayden Traub and Gary Pomerantz. And the topic of tonight's show is exchange-traded funds. With us, we have Gus Flades, who is the founder and managing director of Rita Advisors and the former chief investment officer of ProFund Advisors and their family of exchange-traded funds. If you're interested in calling in about your own portfolio, the telephone number is 888-205-2263, and we'll have more questions and answers following this break.
Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
Hello?
Hey, Dave, it's George. How are you doing? I'm calling to ask you a question.
Hey, Margie and I are doing great. We're living in North Hill now and loving it. What's the question?
Sarah and I have been waiting to move to North Hill for some time, but we haven't been able to sell our house. I see your house is still on the market, and yet you've made the move. How did you do that?
Easy. North Hill has something called the Dream Bridge Loan. It provides up to 12 months of interest-free bridge financing. It's a terrific offer. You should call on it.
Interesting. Sarah would be pleased if I told her we could move to North Hill before the house is sold. Thanks for the information.
One other thing, George. North Hill also has a new monthly service fee incentive. Depending on when you come in, you can have your service fee waived 30, 60, and even 90 days. Check that offer out as well.
Thanks, Dave. I'm glad I called you.
To learn more about North Hill's Dream Bridge Loan and Service Fee Incentive Program, call 781-433-6524. 781-433-6524.
Trout Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Trout Capital Management's founder, Hayden Trout, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Trout Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at troutcapital.com.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
I'm about to present to you a straightforward commercial for GEICO, the third largest personal auto insurer in the country. Last year, over 3 million drivers switched to GEICO, and GEICO received a customer satisfaction rate of 97%. Standard & Poor's has consistently awarded GEICO a AAA rating for financial strength. This is usually where I'd say something cute or clever, but like I said at the beginning, we're keeping this straightforward. Goodbye to you now.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance.
Hello again, you're listening to On the Money. This is Hayden Traub, and if you'd like information about our firm, Traub Capital Management, you can go to our website, traubcapital.com.
And I'm Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, based in Lexington, Mass. For more information about our firm, please visit our website at www.lexingtonwealth.com. Also, there you could receive a copy of our weekly economic commentary, which sort of tracks the information that you're gleaning from the show every week. And the focus of tonight's show, if you're just tuning in, is exchange-traded funds. We have with us Gus Flades, the founder and managing director of Rita Advisors and the former chief investment officer of ProFund Advisors and their family of exchange-traded funds. And so we've been talking about exchange-traded funds this evening. And our question to Gus is, if you were designing your own portfolio and you had to think about what portions of the portfolio you might reallocate to exchange-traded funds in lieu of mutual funds, what portions of the portfolio would you do that within?
Well, without getting too dogmatic or religious on the question of how much of your portfolio should be an index product versus actively managed
products. It's not 100% then?
it should never be 100%. I think there's a market for both in anybody's portfolio. But for investors who do not believe that they have the wherewithal to identify managers who can add value in different segments of the market, or for those who believe that some segments of the marketplace are a lot more efficient than others, indexing should play a much bigger role in their portfolios. And at the very least, if you're looking at segments like the large cap equity segment of your portfolio, which would probably be the largest equity allocation for most investors, it would make sense to have a substantial portion of that portfolio invested in products like the SPDR, for instance. The beauty of the ETF market today is that you have almost every segment of the equity market and then some of the fixed income market, of commodities, of almost any asset class out there in the world today, you can get exposures through ETFs. So depending on how comfortable you are in using index-based products, you can establish a portfolio with ETFs pretty much across the board.
Now, there isn't yet a place for active management really yet within ETFs, but that might be something that we look to in the future something that would develop.
That's the hot debate that's out there today. The first actively managed ETFs have been recently launched. The biggest issues really come from two ends. The first, if you're a fund manager, one of the reasons ETFs have been very successful is that they provide complete transparency to the investor. Typically, your active manager is going to be a little reluctant to tell the world what stocks he's buying or selling every single day because he's afraid that people might front run his trades in the marketplace and take advantage for free of his stock picks without buying his product. So investors, actively managed fund managers, are very reluctant to disclose their portfolio holdings to the marketplace in order to create an actively managed ETF. The problem is if you don't disclose what you're buying and selling, it becomes very difficult for market makers who are actually making the market on the ETF to make a fair market. Because if a market maker is going to quote a two-way market on an ETF, that is the price at which they're prepared to buy and the price at which they're prepared to sell, they need to be able to hedge the other side if an investor comes and hits their bid or their ask. The only way they can hedge themselves, if they can understand, is what's in the portfolio itself. If the active manager doesn't disclose their holdings, the market maker is going to be left holding quite a bit of risk. So that's really one of the big reasons that you haven't seen a major takeoff in actively managed ETFs up until this point.
So the active funds are one variation off of kind of the starting point of index funds, which is kind of the origination of ETFs. There are some other areas where we've seen some ETF usage. One of the ones that's been getting a lot of press lately is commodity ETFs. Specifically for oil and natural gas, the ETFs that are using or investing in those commodities. And so people are getting concerned that they're becoming too important. Can you maybe talk about what's happened there and whether you think that they are a problem as it relates to the underlying commodity?
Well, the challenge is these products have really have been victims of their own success. I think the part of the problem is it goes back to maybe 10, 15 years ago where a lot of institutional investors were making the case that it makes sense for investors to have a certain part of their portfolio invested in real assets. And whether real assets are products like metals, gold, silver, energy stocks, oil, natural gas, or even livestock or grains for that matter. The rationale was that introducing commodities to any portfolio would introduce diversification properties that most investors would benefit through an entire economic cycle. Now, the problem is, in the early days, it wasn't a big deal because most investors had very limited exposure to commodities. And the reason they had limited exposure to commodities is if you're a retail investor, an individual investor, it's almost impossible to establish commodity exposure in your personal portfolios.
The only way was through futures, right?
The only way was through futures, which most people don't trade. Now, one of the beauties of the ETF market is that it democratizes institutional investment techniques and makes them available to individual investors. So in came the commodity ETFs. The first commodity ETF was the gold product. Then came the U.S. oil products, the natural gas products. You have basket commodity products that are trading now as ETFs. So now it's become a lot easier for all kinds of investors to participate in this market. And billions of dollars have moved into some of these products. Now, some of the products, for instance, USO, which is the U.S. oil fund, and the UNG, which is the natural gas fund, have run into issues because they basically are limited to trading the front contract in the futures market to establish the exposure for their funds.
Front being the one that's
closest to maturity, correct. Right. So the challenge has been is that the funds have grown to such size that, for instance, I believe the statistic is that on the natural gas fund, every month when that fund is looking to roll its positions, it's representing upwards of 25 to 30% of the open interest in all the contracts that are outstanding. So the concern is that, is that fund starting to have an influence on the behavior of prices? Is it becoming more and more difficult for that fund to rebalance its positions every month as the front contract is looking to expire? So it's causing a lot of concern. It's being exacerbated by the fact that we are living in an environment right now where investors and the public like to think that commodity prices are not only being driven by demand and supply issues in the marketplace, but they could be driven by speculators. And to the extent that speculators have also been using the ETFs to establish or short exposures, there are concerns that they might be being used for wrong purposes. And that I think explains a lot of the interest that's coming out from the press and the media.
And the Congress.
And the Congress.
Right. They're take, putting a beating on some of these funds and speculators in particular.
But the speculators, if they wanted to trade in the contracts, they can trade the futures directly as well.
Right.
So, you know, by and large, whatever's not coming through the ETF would be going to the marketplace anyway, because they're sophisticated traders that have other means to get that exposure.
So for investors that are thinking about investing in commodities and maybe through ETFs, is there something that they should they avoid them for any reason now because of what's going on, or you think it's not likely to be a problem?
Well, like anything, you know, if you're an individual investor, you should be looking for buy and hold positions in your portfolio. You shouldn't be looking to trade in and out of positions on a daily basis, weekly or monthly basis. So it really comes down to a position as to, you know, do you believe in your asset allocation you should have commodity exposure?
Right.
And if you do, it might make sense to allocate a small portion of your portfolio to a well-diversified basket of ETFs or commodities, including metals, grains, and some of the energy stocks that are out there. But, you know, as you would do with stocks, you may consider dollar cost averaging into some of these products, because we have seen a fairly significant run up, even off the highs of last year. You've seen a fairly significant run up, for instance, in the price of oil and natural gas. And you may not be comfortable with the price today, but if you dollar cost average, you'll average in at some price that you'll be comfortable with over a longer period of time.
And just one final question. We have just about a minute left, and so I'm going to put you on the spot. And I'm going to ask you, if you believe that ETFs at this point are battle-tested, I think many individuals, it's new to them to hold them in their portfolios. Given the market turmoil that we just went through, do you feel that at this point that ETFs have really proven themselves as a proven structure to be investing in?
ETFs for most investors are seem like new innovative products that some people could get nervous with. But ETFs are simply a way for an investor to hold a basket of securities. And are they battle-tested? Absolutely. One example I like to give is in 9/11, when the market crashed, we saw a complete disconnect between the cash, the stock market, and the futures market. The SPDR, the S&P 500 ETF, started trading before most of the stocks in the S&P 500 opened up. The SPDR was what the market looked to establish prices in the marketplace again. So again, the SPDR, the ETFs are really established in the marketplace, and they are a tool that most investors and traders are looking for to manage and gain exposure to the marketplace.
Right. I think right at this point that given the volatility that we've experienced during the course of last year, we had 10 or 15% moves sometimes in a day, at least
right.
10,
yeah.
That ETFs really proved their worth, I think,
right.
During
yeah.
that period
gives
of time.
People the opportunity to trade intraday, unlike open-end funds. Not that there isn't a place for open-end funds.
Absolutely. So, Gus, thank you so much for joining us today. You've listened to Gus Flades. He is the founder of and managing director of Rita Advisors and the former chief investment officer of the Pro Fund Advisors and their family of exchange-traded funds. You've been listening to On the Money with Gary Pomerantz and Hayden Traub. Thank you so much for listening.
For the latest financial headlines or to contact the host, go to bostonbusinessradio.com and join us every day at 6 p.m. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of their respective parties and not those of this show's producers or the station. You're listening to On the Money on WBNW AM 1120 and the Money Matters Network.